Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. And this is Tuesday, January 14th, 6 p.m. And tonight's topic is enlightenment. This is a huge topic. A lot of people are seeking enlightenment. And it's actually such a thing as enlightenment when it comes to your health. So I want to talk tonight about health care, about being enlightened, not being enlightened, and really what's the difference. And does enlightenment protect you from suffering? If so, what kind of suffering? I know when I was a kid, I guess in my 20s, teens, 20s, and 30s, I hear people say, I'm trying to find myself. I want to be enlightened. And I just scratched my head. And I said, what do you mean, find yourself? Look in the mirror. And then life went on. And then when I had this big crisis with, the government prosecuting me because a patient got better, his diabetes went away, I said, whoa, I need some enlightenment. I need information. I'm missing something here. I need enlightenment. If I had only been enlightened, I would not be suffering because I would understand what the truth is. I'd have no illusions. So let's look at the history of enlightenment in the world, what it has meant, what it has produced, and then we're going to talk about enlightenment in medicine, or lack thereof, and then we're going to talk about what being enlightened means to you personally. What's the difference? Like, what about it? So the first enlightenment I was aware of was the 18th century definition. So in the 18th century, there was a philosophical movement that stressed the importance of reason and critical reappraisal of existing ideas and social institutions. And so this is one perspective on enlightenment. So enlightenment is applying reason and the critical reappraisal of existing ideas and social institutions. And so now, another term for enlightenment, which is more vague, and which is a term that we now use today, kind of colloquially that most people are referring to, is kind of the Hinduism or a Buddhism version of enlightenment, which is the awakening to an ultimate truth whereby man is freed from the endless cycle of suffering. Now, they say reincarnations, but what we're all concerned about immediately is the here and now. We're talking suffering. Big time suffering. And enlightenment then is billed as something that's going to release you from a cycle of suffering, endless suffering. And so it's a state of transcendent divine experience and whatever religion you are, can just translate this into a religious experience where the God that you worship is basically more favorably disposed towards you. And this is also a state of beauty, and it's the extinction of desire. Now, desire means there's two ways of looking at having no desire. You can have no desire because you just don't want anything, or you can have desire because you already have all that you desire. So either way, you're in a state of contentment. So then enlightenment is supposed to yield the end of suffering, a state of beauty, a state of contentment. And so the other thing, the European movement of enlightenment and that was ongoing to the 1800s, it advocated use reason and individualism instead of tradition, that means doing what you're told, what was done in the past, and established doctrine. And the Enlightenment brought about humanitarian reforms, which is even more pleasurable concept. Oh, my God, now we have the end of suffering, we have beauty, we have contentment, and we have a humanitarian gestalt about us. I mean, this is getting pretty, pretty good. And so now we look at the Webster Dictionary definition, which is always going to bring us down to earth here. It says a person is educated or informed and made aware of something, freed from illusion. In this case, we can use a modern term, which would be propaganda, or exceedingly wise. So with respect to healthcare, when we say enlightenment, what we're talking about is being educated or informed, being made aware, being freed from propaganda, being made exceedingly wise. And so someone who's been introduced to the mysteries of a particular activity, a religion, say Buddhism or Christianity, whatever, but the mysteries of some activity, that person is considered enlightened. So what would it mean to be enlightened in terms of your health care? I have a chat room up. There's a lot of chatter in the chat room. So if you guys in the chat room can hear me, just say so. Okay, sound is good. All right, they say the sound is good. So we're going to take questions at the end, by the way. So what would enlightenment mean in terms of healthcare? What does it mean in terms of just this radio series, enlightenment? Well, enlightenment would mean the dispelling of illusion. And so one illusion would be that your cholesterol level has anything at all to do with your health. That's a huge illusion. Another illusion would be the diagnosis of cancer. Has anything to do with cancer? We know from research and looking into things that even the cancer people themselves indicate that 50% of all people diagnosed with cancer actually don't have a condition that would cause them to drop dead a day earlier than their allotted life, at least in the United States, of 76 years old if you're a man or 79 years old if you're a woman. So to be enlightened would be to be aware of this cancer situation. To be enlightened would be to be aware if you're a male and you have prostate cancer, you're actually going to live longer, 4 years longer, than someone who doesn't have prostate cancer. That's being enlightened. Another state of enlightenment would be to know that fewer than 5% of heart attacks are deadly. It's enlightenment. So when someone says something's as serious as a heart attack, then you know it's actually quite trivial. So these are areas of enlightenment. Another area of enlightenment might be to know that prenatal care actually decreases your chances of having a live birth. So these are all areas of enlightenment. And so a lot of people would say, oh my God, Dr. Daniels, this is such bad news, this is depressing. What is the point? What is the point of being enlightened if it leads me to have less trust in my government, if it leads me to have less trust in my doctor? And some people would even say less trust in their God, although I don't agree with that. I think if you believe in God, you should believe in God, trust in that, and you know, don't second-guess that. So where does enlightenment, what is the benefit of enlightenment? If you get all this angst and because you see everyone else going in one direction, and because you're enlightened, you see there's a cliff in front of them, and they're all going to jump off the cliff. But if you don't go jump off the cliff, they won't be your friend. And so what do? Now you don't have any friends, but you're enlightened. And where in that mix is their happiness? Well, I would say this to people who have concerns with medical enlightenment. The problem with medical enlightenment is once you get started on that road of medical enlightenment, one thing leads to another and another and another. It's one thing to hear that 85% of all medical care is useless, but it's quite another to hear that the cholesterol therapy is useless because the high cholesterol is protective. It's another thing to hear that blood pressure therapy is useless because the side effects of the drugs kill as many or more than are benefited by it. It's another thing to hear that with cholesterol therapy, the NNT, that means numbers needed to treat to benefit from cholesterol therapy, is 1,250 people need to be treated for 1 year, but the NNH, number needed to harm, they got that new term now, NNH, they had to create it, and that's how bad it is, is only three. So you need to treat three people a year with cholesterol medicines in order to harm at least one, and you need to treat 1,250 in order to benefit at least one. This is by the drug company's measures. I use their numbers. I don't go for all this alternative, looking for my own data stuff. No. I use only their numbers. So you're enlightened, you realize that being HIV positive means you can live about as long as a person who's HIV negative. All of these things, as you start gathering this together, you get more and more enlightened. Initially, a sense of panic can set in. And that's what prompted me to pick this topic. Because I had a client who was filled with angst. He said, "Oh my God, Dr. Daniels, after working with you, I've found out that things weren't what I thought, that you know, there's all these poisons in my food, that the water's not safe, that the air is not good, and the government is, you know, I won't say behind this all, but certainly aiding and abetting the whole situation, and that I'm kind of on my own here, and I got to really look out for myself." So he said, what's the advantage of being enlightened if those other people who are not enlightened can eat hamburgers and go to fast food joints and that they don't have any problems? Well, where is the advantage of being enlightened? What's the difference of being enlightened? So I'm going to tell you this person's experience. I'm not going to tell you any names or anything, but just experience. So this person led a regular everyday life. He believed in the dogma of the day. He believed in the tradition. He believed in everything. He had no suspicion that anything was wrong. And one day, he had a upheaval in his life and became distraught and distressed over this spiritual loss. And he became very depressed and agitated. He couldn't sleep. He couldn't eat. He just got worse and worse and worse. And every day he felt worse. And every day he felt worse. So he drank a little more alcohol, a little bit, but not much. And he went to the doctor. The doctor said, "Here's a sleeping pill." He says, "Oh, good idea. I'll take that." I took a sleeping pill. And he says, "Oh, you know, I feel well. I don't feel great." Went back to the doctor. The doctor says, "Hey, here's an antidepressant." So he's in the line at the pharmacy waiting to get his turn to get his antidepressant. He says, "You know, I think I better call up a friend of mine and say, and ask him what they think." So I called up a friend of his, which happened to also be a client of mine, and she says, "You know what? You got to talk to Dr. Daniels." He says, "Well, I'm at the pharmacy now. I can't really do that." She says, "I'll talk to Dr. Daniels." So she got the name of the drug from him, gave me a call, didn't tell me anything, any detail except to say, "Is this drug good for depression?" I said, "Well, that drug will help you kill yourself, and it'll help you become impotent if you're a guy. And, you know, just come through the basic list." And I said, "And if you got a girlfriend, it'll make you want to kill her." So I don't think it's a good drug. And when you mix up a sleeping pill and alcohol, it could kill him. So calls her friends back. She gives him the good news. And he says, wait a minute. So he goes back up to the counter, and he gives him the drug back and says, "I'm not going to be needing this." Walked out of the drugstore. And gave me a call and started working together. Well, okay. So first he had to drink some water. He says, "All right, well, I guess I could drink water if it came to it." Then because he drank alcohol, and if you drink alcohol, it's really tough to beat depression. It's just not happening. Don't even expect it. So we had to give him a couple of vitamins to get him off the alcohol. So you notice over time his alcohol was petering out. Then I said, "Well, you know what? you're smoking cigarettes. If, yeah, I like to smoke cigarettes. So, yeah, if you like to smoke cigarettes, then smoke organic cigarettes and roll your own, and you'll be just fine. So he did that. And he started getting better and better. The minute it changed his diet, he's like, oh, my God, I mean, I can't just eat out at a restaurant. No, that's not going to work. So he started cooking at home, and he managed to get a crock pot and threw all the food in the crock pot at night. He woke up, it was done, and he ate that for the day, and then got in the habit of things. And, you know, started his day out with a green drink and some water. And all these little things he started doing, a little this, a little that, and taking his vitamins. And one day he said, you know what, doctor? This healthy stuff sure is a lot of work, but I'm so much stronger. I feel so much more upbeat. I get all this energy. He says, man, when I first met you, I was just ready to check out. I was almost dead. He says, but I'm jealous. I'm jealous of all those people who are not enlightened, all those people who don't know about all this stuff, and they can just go on with their life just carefree and not worry about a thing. I said, wait a minute. Hold on. I have a crystal ball. Let's take a look at a few of those lives. Let's take a look at the lives of people who are not enlightened. And what does it mean to not be enlightened? This is not to say that it's bad to be enlightened or not be enlightened, but it is to say that there is a difference between being enlightened and not enlightened. So in this case, we'll just review this. Being enlightened means you realize that the cause of disease lies totally within your control. That's what it means to be enlightened from a medical or health point of view. So you realize that the total cause of your disease, whatever it might be, is totally within your control to stop. Right? Now, if you're even more enlightened, then you also know that, you know, what to do. You also know what things to watch out for. You know that it matters what air you're breathing. It matters what radioactive waves you're being subject to. You know, if you're using a microwave to cook your food, or staying next to a microwave while it cooks, or if you sleep next to your cell phone, or if you live under a cell tower, you realize these things matter. The next thing you realize matters, you realize it matters what you eat, what the food is, where it comes from, you know, where it was grown. So all these things you know these things matter. And then vitamins, you realize that not all vitamins are healthy for you. Some vitamins are better than others. And sometimes you don't need a vitamin at all. And you realize just because you live in America, we'll just say for a minute, it might be the richest country on earth. We don't know, but it might be. Pretty wealthy, though. But there are parasites. They really do exist. And they are eating away at you. And that old expression, what's eating you, came from the knowledge that parasites really are inside your body and really are eating you. So that's what it means to be enlightened in terms of your health care. The other thing, you know, with your health care is since it's within your control to be healthy or become healthy, you realize then that it's not within anyone else's control. So you can't just hand somebody a pile of money and you'll be healthy. You actually have to do something. You may want to hand someone a pile of money anyway and then do something. So that's what it means to be enlightened. Okay, so you know that you've got to do something in order to get healthy, and it's totally within your means to do it, and you know you're totally capable of it. So what does it mean to not be enlightened in terms of healthcare? To not be enlightened in terms of healthcare is to actually believe that you're helpless. So the unenlightened person, when it comes to their healthcare, feels totally helpless, that they can't do anything. They feel that the cause of their health is external, and the cause of their illness is external as well. And we were taught this in medical school. I'm, you know, trained as a physician, so all health is external. That's why you have doctors, right? Doctors externally apply therapy, which creates health. So the person is totally passive. The other thing that you believe, if you're not enlightened, is you believe the government is looking out for you. They've examined every single drug on the market, and that they're all completely safe, and that a drug is only unsafe at the moment that it's recalled. It's not unsafe a minute before it's recalled. So this is example of unenlightened thinking. Another piece of unenlightened thinking is that your diet doesn't matter. Does not matter. Not important. Don't worry about it. And the more expensive the food, the more healthy it must be, because, of course, Things that cost more money are, of course, more valuable. So this is fundamentally unenlightened thinking. In the United States, it even goes another step further in that if you pay someone to cook food for you, that's called going to a restaurant, then it's better, and it means or confers upon you a higher status than if you cook for yourself. Or heaven forbid, someone who loves you like your wife or girlfriend should cook for you. So this is unenlightened thinking. So where does it lead? Let's take a look. So an unenlightened thinker might watch TV, listen to commercials, and might perceive, either through habit or maybe through work situation or circumstance, that a cup of coffee in the morning is a good thing. And over time, he might get a little more tired and decide that two cups is a good thing, or maybe more and more and more. And then you'll notice that towards the middle of the day, say around noon or 3 p.m., that his energy is a little down and he needs another cup of coffee. And this goes on. And it may dull to a pot of coffee twice a day, or it may just be two cups twice a day. But as this progresses, a person notices that they're getting a little difficulty sleeping at night. And instead of attributing any of it to the coffee, they go to the doctor, an external source, and say, help me. And the doctor says, of course I can. Here's a sleeping pill. It's the latest one on the market. It's not addictive. It has no side effects. And it's just the next best thing since sliced bread. And we all know how good sliced white bread is. But not being enlightened, this individual accepts this as a pretty good deal and takes the sleeping pill at that time. But then they notice they have a little daytime grogginess, but not to worry, increase the coffee. And they notice they get irritability. All of a sudden, they feel anxious. They feel nervous. So they go back to the doctor. And the doctor says, you know what? I think what you need is an antidepressant. I think you're a little depressed. Yeah, still depressed. So we'll give you the latest whiz-bang antidepressant on the market. And then the person takes this new whiz-bang antidepressant, and they notice that they think they're feeling a little better, but they still have a little bit of a breakthrough irritability and nervousness during the day. So they're sleeping kind of okay at night. The sleeping pill seems to make a difference. And they're taking this antidepressant to say it's a god. And then after a while, they notice that they're impotent. They have erectile dysfunction. Then they go back to the doctor. The doctor says, well, here, we have Viagra, Cialis. They're both very good. Take your pick. And I think this will work very well for you. And the person says, oh, my God, thank you so much, doctor. I just didn't want to have to compromise my social life. And so the person goes on and on with this for a while. And they notice that the irritability is a little more. They got to maybe drink a little more alcohol kind of in the early evening, and that kind of helps them relax. And they take the antidepressant in the morning and the sleeping pill at night. And things are fairly balanced. You know, they kind of got their little, you know, everything's figured out. And they just kind of mosey along for a while. And then one night, or I shouldn't say one night, one early evening, they notice that their eyesight is not so good. But, you know, money's a great thing. And so you call up your friends, call in a few favors, and they refer you to the whiz-bang best ophthalmologist within 100 miles of where you live. And then the ophthalmologist as a personal favor to whoever prevailed upon him to assist in this matter, says, I'll fit you in, and we can help you. And, oh, my God, a little bit of laser, just going to tap that blood vessel, and it'll stop leaking. So the person gets a laser, they get their eye tapped, and things kind of mosey on a bit. Person's extremely happy that they had access to this fine medical attention, that they had platinum insurance, which covered most of it, and that they're able to pretty much go on with their day. And things kind of go on until about maybe 2-3 months later, and the person notices their eyeball bleeds again. And it's a sign the person's actually involved in quite a bit of travel. And so they end up in a different city, a different coast, and they find another really excellent ophthalmologist who says, you know what, I could do laser, and we could laser this eye all day long, but quite frankly, it's just going to keep leaking, and hopefully it'll just be limited to this one eyeball. But since you're here, we'll do laser. So I do laser again. You know, this time the laser doesn't really seem to help, and so now this person, unenlightened, is taking jumbo Starbucks in the morning, jumbo Starbucks in the afternoon, without cream, doesn't really matter. An antidepressant in the morning, a sleeping pill at night, alcohol in the early afternoon, and more alcohol with dinner. And, of course, Cialis in the event of any activity. So the question then is, what to do about this eyeball that keeps bleeding? I happen to know this person. And so he mentioned this to me. I said, well, why don't you try stopping your alcohol? He said, oh, absolutely not. I will not do that. There is no way I'm going to stop my alcohol. I enjoy my alcohol. It is a privilege of the economic status I've achieved. I said, okay, you won't stop the alcohol. Try this. Drink a glass of water before and after each alcoholic drink. He says, you know what? I think I can do that. And so he had noticed every time he drank that his eyeball got worse. So he tried one night drinking the water before and after his alcohol drink. And he noticed that his eyeball actually got better, that the alcohol did not affect his eyeball. And so I said to him, I said, well, do you think maybe you should change your diet? He said, no, there's absolutely nothing wrong with me. I'm perfectly healthy. Now that is the difference between being enlightened and being unenlightened. Now, the enlightened individual was making lifestyle changes, was getting results, seeing incredible improvement in his health, really even a reversal of aging, and feeling extremely vital and excited and happy about life. But he was worried that he wasn't fitting in, and he was worried that if he didn't drink his water in the morning and take his vitamins, it wasn't as good a day. And so he noticed that when he started his day right, the rest of the day went right. Now, the unenlightened person, on the other hand, had a pretty gruesome day, but felt very confident that he was doing the right thing. And so was not nervous and was not worried at all. So, I write jokes, so I have a joke about this. These two guys are talking. And so the first guy says, I've been taking turpentine. I've been drinking turpentine for some time now, and I feel great. But I'm worried that the label on the can says it's poisonous. Second guy says, you know, I've been taking my cholesterol medication every day for some time now, and I feel perfectly lousy. But I'm not worried because the FDA has approved the medicine. So this is what we're facing. People who are unenlightened are living in bliss because of their attribution of everything to something outside of themselves, number one. Number two, their total confidence that what they are doing is something that other people in society would approve of. So they're placing the approval of others, the adherence to tradition, the adherence to dogma, the adherence to propaganda as their ultimate good. And they worship that. And that makes them happy. And that's okay. And I say it's okay because I personally believe that it's everyone's right to choose. That's what life is about, living life the way you want to. And to do what they're happiest with. But let's refer back to enlightenment then. So there's one level of enlightenment, which is that you realize you're responsible for your health. You realize that your actions are what makes things happen. The next level of enlightenment is understanding that just because someone is not enlightened, or doesn't share your state of not having illusions, doesn't share your state of knowledge, it doesn't mean that they can't be your friends. It doesn't mean that they're not very nice people. And it doesn't mean that you need to especially convince them. Simply by being so healthy, being so happy, people are actually drawn to you. It makes a very happy life for you. Even people who are not enlightened will say, you know what? You're very happy. You're very healthy. I like that. I like you. And that's great. So you need to realize that it's okay for everyone to wake up in their own time, at their own time, and to be happy. The difference between being enlightened and unenlightened is if you're enlightened, then when you have a problem, you can handle it in real time, right there, on the spot, without resorting to health insurance or calling an ambulance or many other actions that are stressful, expensive, inconvenient, and often ineffective. So there's a question here somewhere on my thing here. All right. How would I advise physicians and others in the field on renewal of medical licenses? I would say if you're able to find honest work, just let your license lapse. Once your license lapses, the medical board has no jurisdiction over you and cannot harass you or prosecute you for anything. So I would say if someone has a medical license and they're trying to get off this hamster wheel of murdering people, then the best way to get off the hamster wheel is to quietly let your license lapse. And that's really that's important. Because if you turn in your license prior to it lapsing, then that is a mark on your record. That's considered something that's considered suspicious activity. So if you simply refuse to renew the license, then that solves the problem. Okay. Another question is, most continuing medical education seems to be only big pharma promoting the murder of patients by medicine. Absolutely. I mean, big pharma built the medical schools, built the medical boards, and wrote the curriculum and designed the drugs. I mean, that's like going on a basketball court, blowing your whistle, and say, hey, guys, time to play golf. Well, why would you go to a basketball court to play golf? So in other words, if the drug companies, big pharma, and hospitals and insurance companies are kind of all in it now. I mean, the reason and the way that big pharma maintain the power is by sharing the wealth. And so they agreed to share the wealth with the insurance companies, share the wealth with the hospital. And that has really helped them endure. So we have really a three-part thing going on here in terms of murdering the patient. And so the only officially endorsed information a doctor is going to get is information that's going to be resolved in the death of the patient. And so the only recourse that the doctor has is to not play the game. And if you don't play basketball, I mean, you take off your jersey and you walk out of the stadium. That's pretty much the size of it. To say, hey, I'm going to stay on the basketball court, I got this forearm here, and I'm going to hit this little ball called a golf ball because I found that that's really the best way to go about it. That's not acceptable. And so once you realize this whole medical thing is just a game, it's just an illusion, that makes it easier for you to walk away, either as a patient or as a physician, that you realize you have been engaged in illusion, in a deception, in a piece of propaganda, in a manufactured reality, if you will, that's basically an illusion held together by government police enforcement. It basically says, if you don't believe these lies, then we're going to lock you up. So, for example, we have laws now that if someone's HIV positive and they have sex with someone without disclosing to their partner that they're HIV positive, that's now felonious assault in some states. And so what we have then is a whole legal system that's all wrapped up in and reinforcing this illusion that healthcare heals or healthcare is healthy. And so then as an individual, whether a patient or a doctor, if you decide not to share that illusion, then you have to be creative in terms of not sharing the illusion in such a way as to not become an object of the police state. For example, if you're a parent and you don't share the illusion about the safety of vaccines, one really especially awful one is Gardasil, a vaccine they're giving women to prevent cervical cancer and human papilloma wart virus. But since they started giving this vaccine, cervical cancer has increased and so has infection of the cervix, which supposedly is what the vaccine is preventing. So if you don't share this illusion, let's say as a parent, then there may be repercussions in terms of the government action or police action. And so what you have to do then, existing in a state of enlightenment, is to find a way to either be exempt. I say it's even worth switching your residence to a state that doesn't make these vaccines compulsory, you know, refusing conscientiously, whatever that entails. And if you have an elderly relative who chooses to refuse to participate in this illusion, this ritualistic murder or homicide disguised as a dance of caring, then you have to find creative ways to help that person or assist them in living an enlightened life, which is their choice, and saying no, of course, without the elderly protective people intervening. So that's the story there. Okay, so another question in the chat room is, what can be done about busy brain between midnight and 4 a.m.? Okay. Okay, so this person says they don't know if they're enlightened, but they want to know what can be done about it. So the fact that they're asking the question, which is what hopefully what they can do about their busy brain, that is a definite sign of enlightenment. So what can you do about busy brain? First thing you can do is you can stop eating around 6 p.m., and that allows your liver to get a lot of its work done from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. In fact, stop eating at about 5 p.m., then the liver can get that work done from 4 to 8 p.m. When you eat later than that, the liver's got to do its work double time between the midnight and 4 a.m. So that's one thing you can do to get rid of busy brain. Next thing you can do to get rid of busy brain is take something called milk thistle. This strengthens your liver, makes it more powerful, and makes it work with a higher capacity and more quietly, so you can get to sleep between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m. Of course, another thing you can do to get rid of this midnight to 4 a.m. So the midnight to 4 a.m. is caused by your body being overly active and getting cleansing and healing done that it can't get done during a day. The reason it can't get it done during a day is either because you're dehydrated, your liver needs a little more help, you're eating your meals too late, or there's too much stuff in your intestines you need to avoid. That's where, of course, Vitality Capsules come in. And at VitalityCapsules.com sale, you'll be happy to know, I hired a web guy tonight, and he promises me he's going to have it done tomorrow, and I'll send a email to the list letting you know about our going-out-of-date sale. Vitality Capsules are going out of date at the end of February, but since they are exclusively made of natural leaves, roots, and seeds that are ground up very finely, then they're only slightly less powerful, but they do not become toxic like pharmacology or drugs do. Okay, so you can take Vitality Capsules, get the crap out during the day, and then your mind is not going to be busy at night. So that's a busy brain. Okay, we have some more questions here. Let's see. We'll take an online question. I think it's working. Yes, it's working. Hi, you're on the air?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Dr. Daniels, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I didn't dream I would be talking to you on the very first time I heard your program.
Okay, you're welcome.
My question is, can we get a transcript of any of your broadcasts and the prior broadcasts?
We're working on that. The quality was pretty poor on the prior broadcast. So now that I've gotten better quality, I'm hiring a transcriptionist, so they'll be available.
The problem I have is I'm hard of hearing. And I drink up every word you say, but sometimes things happen that I don't hear as well as I want to.
Okay, we'll be having some transcripts available in the future.
You will have them
available
in the future. Very good.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank
you. And I'm a big fan, and
you're
I feel like I'm so enlightened, I'm going to float away.
Oh, good. So you should be very happy and peaceful, too.
Yes, absolutely. And good luck and have a great day.
All right, thank you. Bye. Okay, we have another question in the chat room. Let's see, they're all really nice questions. Let me see if I can find one. Somebody wants to know. About microwaves. This is very interesting. Now, people are worried about these microwaves and these waves in the air that are degrading our health. And so I decided I would look into this. Internet's a wonderful place. And so I looked into these waves. And yes, there's microwaves, and there's the waves of the cell phones as well, and there's just really an assortment of stuff running out there at some pretty harmful frequencies. And so in the immediate here and now, one has no control over that. One can move or one can relocate. And, you know, I would advise that really with extreme caution. And I'll tell you why. Because I actually met people down here in Panama, I'm broadcasting from Panama, whose total job when they lived in the United States was disguising cell phone towers as trees. Disguising cell phone towers as other ordinary structures where no one would even suspect it's a cell phone tower. And so people's ability to move to a place where they perceive or visually see no cell phones, that would be fairly ineffective. It turns out wearing a tinfoil hat really is protective. And so, again, in the society we live in, it's not a lot of tolerance. So, yes, get a hat, you know, put some tinfoil inside it and wear it, and you'll find it actually, it does help. Now, I think it cuts it down about 90%. 99%. But that's still an order of magnitude, and that is somewhat helpful. But the other thing, as bad as all these microwaves and all these other stuffs are, it has less of an effect on your body when you eat a diet that is low in toxins or when you cleanse more frequently. Another plug for Vitality Capsules. And I was shocked when I had a patient many years ago, and she could not tolerate being in the same room with a computer or an electrical device of any kind. This made it tough because her major occupation was being a housewife, and here she was. She couldn't even be in the kitchen with all these appliances. And so, of course, the solution that will come to anyone's mind is, well, what can I take to make this go away? The truth of the matter is, it's what can you not take? So it turns out if you stop eating contaminated foods, then you're less sensitive to these waves, and you handle them a lot better, and they don't have as profound a effect on your body. Okay, we have another question here. Let's see.
Hi, Dr. Daniels.
Yes.
We have had tremendous success with turpentine, and I wanted to know if it can be used safely on cats and dogs and on the feet of young children that won't take it in their mouth?
I am not a veterinarian. I do know that many different animals are very, very different. And something that can help one animal, like, say, a horse,
mm-hmm.
could kill another animal, like, say, a kitty cat. So I know that this
exactly.
is probably your household pet. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would not recommend taking that chance. I mean, you could check with maybe an enlightened veterinarian and see if they
okay.
could help you with that. On the feet of a child, let's talk about an infant, possibly. I don't recommend turpentine in the feet of infants.
Okay.
I don't like that. I would use maybe Vicks VapoRub, which is a milder thing. With infants, you have to realize that infants are not little people. They're a different
mm-hmm.
they're in a different state of being, and so you can't just do adult stuff.
Okay, like a 6-year-old though.
Well, the 6-year-old, I think you need to exert your parental authority.
Okay.
That's the way you handle a 6-year-old. And you have to do that, because what's going to happen is once you assert your parental authority and it works and it benefits him, he'll have a lot more respect for you. And that's really going to make the family a lot closer. Yeah,
okay.
That's huge.
And
don't pass
so
that one up.
Thank you. And it's the same dose. Is it 40 pounds and over a teaspoon?
You have the report. You should definitely check the report.
Okay.
And so, stick with that dose. And you can click support, and for $49 you'll get another copy of the report and a 10-minute consultation as well.
Okay, great. Thank you so
okay.
much.
All right. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We have another question.
Hi, Doc. It's Mary. I wonder
Hi,
if
you're
you...
up here. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wondered if you could tell me, are there any supplement formulas for babies, for newborns like 3 months old, that are made out of goat milk
supplement?
Instead of cow milk?
Your best bet for that is not, there are baby formulas that do say they're made from goat milk, and they're dehydrated and dried up, and they're on the shelf. You can find them. I've seen them. So you can get powdered goat's milk. But then you come down to what is it really? How is it powdered? What are they added to it? And there's a whole long list of questions you could ask yourself. So if you have a 3-month-old and you'd like the 3-month-old to get some kind of natural nutrition, I would say the best thing is
She is being breastfed, but when her mother's in school, she ends up sometimes running out of milk and having to supplement. And the stuff that she's getting, I think, has soy in it, so it's causing gas pain. So we need a different supplement.
Yeah, so you have to go to the goat person who sells goat milk and buy it directly. That's one. The other thing I would say to do is put an ad in the paper saying, breast milk wanted. I know when I was pregnant, I made so friggin' much milk. I mean, it dripped down into my socks. So there are ladies out there, probably not very far from where you live, who are making a whole lot of milk that's going to waste. So. Mm-hmm. Again, I think that people need to, the first thing that's going to come to your mind when you have a problem is, what can I buy from the store? And let that come and let it go. And then the next thing you're going to do is say, now what else can I do? And you can do what people have done a long time ago. You can just put out the call, hey, we need some help here. And they say, oh, my God, thank God, my breasts are so huge and they're painful. Oh. So I can just breastfeed your kid when my kid's got enough. So I would definitely look for those relationships. There are tons of women I've encountered, not tons, but many, who have just made excessive breast milk. I'm like, what do I do with this stuff? I'd love to pump it and give it away to somebody. I would do that. I would not go to a breast milk bank because they are now being forced to pasteurize their breast milk before they sell it. And they sell it for $6 an ounce. So it's not worth it, and it's expensive. So that's what I would say to them.
Okay, great. One other quick question. What do you do with picky eaters between the ages of 2 and 5.5 that are eating
hungry.
A terrible
Let
diet?
Let them go
of,
hungry.
Let them
no,
go hungry?
Let them go hungry. No. Nope. Yeah. Feed them
what
you feed them,
introduce?
And if they don't eat, then you cheerfully send them to bed with a glass of water, I would say.
And what
but
kind
you
of
need
food
to cheerfully let them go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you're not running a fast food joint. You're not a short order cook. That's what I would do for picky eaters.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Okay, we got a lot of action in the chat room here. But yeah, it's really important. I think to be totally enlightened about it. You know, we're so propagandized. Our first thought is, okay, what can I get from the store? All right, what product, packaged product, can I get? And that's the first response. And the reason that's not an enlightened response is because we know we live in the United States. We know if it's FDA approved, it's probably dangerous. We know that whatever the label says, there may be more things in the package that the person or the manufacturer is not obligated to put on the label. So we know the label is unreliable, yet, of course, we continue to read them. So it's important to, you know, allow yourself to have the unenlightened thought, whatever it might be, just let it pass and say, okay, now what can I do? Now what can I do that involves either me taking action or me and another human being that I trust working together on this? Or, heaven forbid, making contact with a stranger or making a new friend. And having a baby is an excellent time for any woman to make new friends, because women are always trading tips on how to do this and how to do that and helping each other. And it's a wonderful time. And no matter what your situation is, there's something you have too much of when you have a kid, whether it's too much time because maybe you're staying home, it's just the one, maybe it's too much milk, maybe if someone gave you all these baby clothes or someone who's 1 year old and the kid outgrew him when he was 6 months old. But everyone's got something to trade and barter with each other, and young mothers are just really the best. It gives an incredible start to being a mother and to the kids, because women can often form incredible friendships of helping each other from that time forward for the next 18 to 20, even 30 years. So that's really that's important to do. Now, let me check my chat room. These guys are really going at it here. Okay. Oh, I have to announce that I also have a Sunday show. Sunday show, 8 p.m. and RBN, that's Republic Broadcasting Network, for people who can handle the truth. And last week's show was What a Woman's Worth. And we talked about herbal things and natural things women can do to help to control the home, actually. And we're going to continue that this Sunday at 8 p.m., Republic Broadcasting Network. That's just a plug for the other show. And so I'll be doing both shows, this show on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and then Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's the show, and we have to talk about next week's show. Next week's show is a doozy. Next week's show is Lyme disease. I'm going to break my silence about Lyme disease. I've been hesitant about this for actually 15 years now. So I'm going to speak up, and I'm going to tell you about Lyme disease. I'm going to tell you about the Lyme disease test, what Lyme disease really is, how it's actually spread, and what it takes to cure you. So next week is going to be Lyme disease and what's really going on. And let's see, our chat room is done. So in summary, enlightenment is the acceptance of prevailing dogma. I'm sorry, the non-acceptance of prevailing dogma, seeking the truth for yourself, freeing yourself from illusion. And once you free yourself from illusion, life becomes much simpler, much easier, and a lot more fun. Because all of a sudden, the problems are not as insurmountable, and the solutions are not as outrageous. For example, if you're diabetic, the unenlightened solution is to check your blood sugar 4 times a day, to shoot yourself up with insulin anywhere from 2 to 4 times a day. And then, of course, when you overdose yourself, hopefully you won't go into a coma before you grab and reach for your piece of candy to pull yourself out of it. that's a lot of drama. It's very complicated, and you know, it's a pretty formidable task to turn yourself into a human pincushion, or even drug addict, actually. Of course, the enlightened understanding is that the diabetes is based on what you eat. And once you understand that, and once you get a program of food and fluids, it becomes necessary to check your blood sugar only once a day and to take the insulin not at all. And then as you improve, as you get better and better, you'll reach the point where you don't even need to check your blood sugar. And you actually can walk away from the disease. So being enlightened is a very nice place to be. It's something you really want to achieve in terms of your health, because this gives you so many more choices, and it makes the rest of your life blissful, because all of a sudden you don't have to be limited by your health or limited by your perception of disease as being someone else's responsibility, someone else's problem, or responsibility you cannot possibly bear. So I invite people to definitely tune in for the second half of the RBN show, which is A Woman's Worth. We talk about the traditional or historical role of women healing the household. And also, of course, tune in next week, Tuesday, same time, same place, for Truth About Lyme. We have one more question. We have time for it. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Daniels. I would like to ask a question for, I have a couple of friends that are diabetes type 1 instead of type 2, and I know that usually type 2 is associated more with being able to control it orally and all that, but is there any natural remedy or solution or help for type 1 diabetes?
Yes, there is. Type 1 diabetics, it seems much more dependent upon exercise. That's really an essential piece to the cure, even vigorous exercise. Whereas type 2, you can just cure that with a, you know, walk around the block, basically. It's much, much less challenging. And there are some diet-specific things for type 1 diabetics. For example, type 1 diabetics seem to have a much bigger issue with their fluids. In other words, dairy is huge. The research done by the regular medical establishment has established that 80% of all type 1 diabetics would not be type 1 had they not been bottle fed, which is shocking. So, of course, you can't reverse your bottle feeding, but as an adult, let's say you got type 1 as a kid and now you're an adult and you're still type 1, you know, it's definitely a case for discontinuing all dairy products. And in my experience, type 1s who've done that have an incredible improvement in their control and a drop in their insulin dose. And now the standard medical community, their position has changed. They said, okay, type 1 diabetic, there is no such thing as a brittle diabetic, only a brittle diet. And so I have heard of people, type 1s being cured. Personally, the best I've done is I got one type 1 down to only 5 units of insulin a day, but I was the doctor at a juvenile center, and she was discharged, so I don't know what happened with the other 5 units. But 5 units a day of insulin, of course, is a spit in the ocean. You probably agree. And another type 1 diabetic, I got her down to 1 unit of insulin a day. So, again, lost the follow-up. But it does take determination. It does take, work. But it can be done. Your friend can just send an email to Gabriel, support@vitalitycapsules.com, and just put diabetes in the subject line, and Gabriel will get back to her.
Okay. Thank you so much, Doc.
You're welcome. Yeah, diabetes is really a disease that requires personal attention, certainly type 1. And so I have a program. I have programs where I do provide one-on-one guidance. They're not cheap. Some are as much as $7,000 to $10,000, There are some less expensive options as well, but for type 1 diabetes, it's certainly worth looking into it. Okay, I'll see you next week, and we're going to find out about Lyme. Any Lyme questions, send them to support@vitalitycapsules.com. Gabriel, let me know about it, and we'll answer them on the air as well. Let me see.
Make me